You ever split the bill? Somebody just takes it, which is not a good thing all the time, I know, especially in Europe or whatever. But somebody just takes it, and the next time maybe I take it. It's not that deep. We're not counting. Last time I paid for you, this time you will pay for me. That one I find embarrassing because it's €3.
Really embarrassing. And you know, when if I like him, really like, I would like him to pay for me. If I don't like him, no, like no difference. We can split the bill.
It's if I like him, I would want to maybe not exactly pay for him, but I would want to do stuff for him, get him things or like if I can
No, I
afford
want
it.
him to pay for me if I like him, you know?
Okay, you want to be taken care of. I also want someone to do that for me, but I'm not gonna hold it against them, especially in this country that we are right now. Nigerian men, okay, but German men, I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe I should try.
I
think you
I
should try.
recommend for you. You should
Yeah,
try.
maybe, but I don't have any desire at the moment. When you know, when I meet someone and I like him, of course, I think it will be naturally like. But now, just go to dating app to find
That feels
someone, it's
very
like
mechanic.
stupid for
Yeah.
me.
How about you? I mean, I know you read. When I first met you, I have in a book something about being anxiously attached that I should. Is it in English, that book? I need that book, by the way. I want you to put yourself out there, but not just with the dating apps because the dating apps are weird. I want you to. Your mind should be more open. You never know, truly, because you are like drop dead gorgeous. For the people that can't see Liko, she is fine. Very fine. So put yourself out there, really.
I don't know. I feel I'm like old school. I want to meet some people
The
in
streets?
real life, I
Yeah, that's
guess,
what you can
in real
do.
life. And I understand at once whether I want to continue like conversation because you have this attraction. You have it or you don't have it.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Like, or you have it or you don't have it. It's a catching from biology, from evolution, from our human nature, like it inbuilt in us.
So are you saying that you've never found someone of recent times that you've been pheromonically attracted to? You've not, or you have?
You mean
Are you attracted to anyone, Liko?
anyone? Yeah, no.
Yeah,
You know, I'm attracted to a person whom I like. I know only online.
Okay, is that bad? That's not bad.
I don't know. I don't know yet.
Where does he live? Where does he live?
Far from here, yes.
Long
Like,
distance, but
unfortunately.
it's fine. You can still talk. Like I said before, a lot of my relationships have been helped because of technology. Because if there was no technology, we could not maintain this bond that we have. So you should probably explore it. I just want to say something. In Nigeria, when people ask people out, they just say, "Would you be my girlfriend?" Here, they say, "Would you like to go for drinks?" I never understand that. Now I'm trying to get into it, but like, while we is that what it means when they say, "Would you like to go for drinks?" Is that like a relationship asking? Hey. Okay.
Yeah, this is the point. Yes, because you don't always know whether you are on a real date or just drinking coffee, you know.
I like to convince myself that I'm not, but I mean, I don't know. There's still a lot of things to learn as a Nigerian living in Germany because the culture shocks are so different. It's a lot of things.
Would you like to try German dating or like
I
what is
mean,
your
so
preferences?
the thing is, I don't. My preference is people. I like people. When I have a good connection with somebody, I like to typically just stay with that person and explore it. So it doesn't matter what they are really. What like German, no German, Nigerian, or Nigerian? I don't really care. My main concern is, do we click?
Okay, but you know, you think that you decide, but what decides really
Yeah,
whom you will be with?
I think it's
Biology, you or
it's
what?
a mixture of
Him?
both.
Ah.
It's a mixture of
Some
both.
destiny, some
Destiny,
kind of what?
faith. Oh my God, I don't know.
I don't know.
But
Some miracle.
it's a mixture of both. You deciding mentally because okay, I like how this person thinks and yada yada. Physically attraction, a physical attraction. Okay, I like them and I yeah. You get it. You get it, Liko.
Okay.
Physical attraction and then it's everything combined, but I don't know. I feel like I may be too much for German people because they are very stiff and I'm very all over the place and my energy might be too much. I'm not saying that like they're not German people who I have met and I would like to be with or things like that. But in general, my energy is very high, and Germans like really, really quiet people. So that may be hard for them. I may be a lot. What about
we'll
you?
See.
Do you want
we'll
to
see.
Date a German?
Yeah, I see many attractive men, yeah. But
I mean, what can I say? They're fine.
Okay, we'll see. Okay, so unfortunately, we have to leave.
Yeah, yeah. I wish you all the best with your dating life.
Oh, yeah.
And
thank
you know
you.
What? If you guys can write in the comments your dating experience or your culture shocks, we would really love to hear it. And maybe probably
are you in a situationship now?
Are you in a situationship? Give us the details. We are nosy, please. We are really nosy. Please, let us know. But it was nice having you today, Liko. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you. Good
luck. You and your notes. Good luck with your dating, girl. I wish you all the best.
Oh, same. It was a show about modern dating, and the next hour you will spend with Shona and her podcast, which called is Sisters Nedergam. It's a show between two cousins, one based in Germany and the other one in Singapore. They discuss life, culture, chaos, and everything in between. Join along and listen to episodes behind Tamil food with personal growth and life. Part of Common Voices. Shona, you're welcome.
Sikro vanga. Sisters Nadagon start already.
Yeah, already.
Vanakkam and
welcome to Sisters Nadagon.
We're two cousins, one in Germany
One in Singapore try to make sense of life.
With one call at a time. I'm Shauna, UK-born, to Singaporean Tamil parents, and to make my where are you from question even more complicated, I decided to move to East Germany, where nudity feels just as common as a potato salad.
And I'm Ravi, born and bred in Singapore, where life is efficient, fast and highly productive. And where nudity in your own home is actually illegal, the neighbours can report you for indecent exposure.
We're in our 30s.
And 40s.
Unmarried.
Child-free.
And apparently a topic of discussion at family functions.
No, they've stopped with me because I'm already 40.
So today, our episode is called Biryani and Boundaries.
Yes, biryani and boundaries. So let's tell you a little bit more about biryani. Everyone has an opinion about biryani. Biryani is basically a rice dish, an Indian rice dish. And in a lot of cases, people say biryani is an emotion. And there's a lot going on in biryani. Different types of biryanis are available in different regions of India. And for those of us who have migrated, like Shauna and me, we have our own versions of biryani in our home. So the funny thing is, people always have an opinion about what is the best biryani. Whether biryani should be about rice, whether it should be about meat, is there potato in it, no potato, mint, coriander, whatever. And the funny thing is, people also have an opinion about how we should live our lives.
Yeah. Why aren't you married? Why don't you have children? Why did you move overseas? You know, but...
Yeah.
So today we decided to talk a bit about biryani and boundaries.
Yes. So, you know, biryani and boundaries. And we've decided to talk about biryani in our family recipe as well, because our family biryani has also boundary issues. So really, Kaz, what makes a real biryani to you? Like, what is biryani to you?
I don't know. So I'm a vegetarian, which also kind of goes against the standard biryani. I love a good mushroom biryani with the spices.
Yes.
And for me, a biryani needs the sauce. That is like such an important priority. When I mean a sauce, it's this like kind of Indian gravy. Again, my mouth is always watering, I feel like, when we talk about food. with like the more intense spices, so you can really feel the spices, and then you have this like curry slash sauce that blends with your biryani, and then you've got the yogurt, the raita, and I love it. I feel like I need my cucumber and yogurt with it, and the blend of it together, even though it's more with vegetables, which isn't the traditional method of cooking biryani, it for me like brings all the flavors of spice, the warmth, and then the cooler complexities of the yogurt and the raita with the cucumber together. Like, it's just such a beautiful dish that you can play around with, and I think that's also why biryani has been adapted in so many different regions. When you bring it to different countries, you find different ingredients to add to it. Like, I also tried beetroot biryani. That was so interesting. Also, the biryani was then purple. Yeah, like the color of it was so vibrant, you know? And my cousin here actually makes an incredible biryani, which I got to try in January.
Yeah. I don't know about amazing, but I tried. I tried some mushroom biryani. It is really difficult to make biryani because biryani is basically flavored rice. And, you know, you've got to know how to cook the rice, because if not, it becomes like a porridge, which is not supposed to be. Yeah, so I struggle normally to cook biryani. But, you know, we, like Shauna and I, we actually have a special family biryani recipe. And I love it because it comes from our grandfather. And he used to cook really amazing biryani yearly on our, like, festival, which was called Deepavali. And he would cook for all the guests who would come to the house to celebrate the occasion. Now, how does boundaries feature in our biryani conversation? So, yeah, let's talk about my grandfather's biryani. So my grandfather, he had five children. Like, our fathers were his sons. And they lived in a big house and they all lived together. And yes, it's a thing where all the children get married. They live in the same house with their parents and their children. So you've got like three generations living in the same house. And when I was born, our family was a joint family. So my mother used to tell me that my grandfather made the best tea and he had adapted the ingredients because the ingredients came from Southeast Asia as we had migrated from India to Southeast Asia at that time. And my mom used to tell me that, you know, that house had no boundaries. Like everybody was in everybody's place and everybody was in everybody's business. But she said the only thing that had boundaries was actually my grandfather's biryani because he safeguarded the recipe like it was some military secret. So, you know, she used to like talk about it all the time. And she said she's always wanted to find out like what the recipe was for his biryani because it was just so good. And the thing is that she said that, you know, he would not reveal his biryani and that's where he drew his boundaries. But she still managed to learn the secret recipe because she was his sous chef. She would like basically prep the ingredients. And in prepping the ingredients, she managed to understand the cooking process, the proportions, and she got the recipe. So, you know, like she recreated the pea and she used to like cook it for us. And my mother's biryani recipe was about layered rice. Like, so she would layer the rice and then she would layer the meat and then she would layer the rice again and layer the meat and then layer the rice again. And then she'll cook it in a pot that is sealed with dough. So when that happens, rice cooks inside and it condenses and, you know, you've got like the perfect mix of biryani. So it's quite interesting how, you know, like biryani is so special because with biryani, like families actually draw boundaries around biryani. Like, you know, some families are like, no, you cannot put potatoes in a biryani. Or some people are like, you know, you will not, you cannot layer the meats and the rice. The meat and the rice needs to be separate. Some people don't eat curry. That's where their boundaries are crossed. They're like, no curry with the biryani. You eat the biryani on your own. And some people just, you know, their biryani is like of a different rice. Like, you know, do you have basmati? And some people use a different type of basmati rice. So, yeah, I mean, when we think of biryani, it brings back like amazing memories. And I remember like, so my mom, God bless her soul, she's already passed. And she wrote me a recipe book with her special biryani recipe. And she also dictated boundaries for me because she said, if you cook this biryani for your partner and your partner doesn't like it, she says, that's a red flag, leave him or her. So that was her boundaries for me. And my biryani, her biryani recipe was the boundary marker, basically. So yeah, just a little bit about biryani and our boundaries in that sense. So, Kaz, what do you think of, like, boundaries? Like, you know, since that's the topic and, you know, even if biryanis have boundaries, what more people, right? Like, so, Kaz, what about boundaries?
Yeah, good question. You know, boundaries, I feel, is something I've had to keep learning and I still am learning in my day-to-day. Definitely younger, growing up. Also, I don't know how it was in your household, but in my household, it was easier to have a child who just agreed to what the parents said we're doing. Being less complicated, making less challenges. Mm. So having the space to speak up for myself wasn't as provided as it probably could have been.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, it's a bit complicated because there was things of like, you know, share what you want, but then also you got to listen to what we're doing. So it's a, it was a bit complicated where there's spaces where, you know, you're able to share, but also sometimes then it was just completely ignored or not recognized. And then, so I think the topic of boundaries on what are my limits, what actually are my needs, it took quite a while. Like most of my 20s, I felt like I still wasn't having a clear picture on this. It's actually my late 20s and in my early 30s, and especially I would say in the recent years, has this become more and more prominent of, okay, I do think I'm a person who adapts a lot in many situations, hence probably being able to move so often. Mm-hmm. And
okay,
being someone who is adapting, sometimes you go over your boundaries. Well, for me anyway. And I think, okay, do you know what? This is a situation. This is someone's needs. I'll adapt. And kind of my needs get kind of pushed aside. And I just think, okay, this is a skill I have. I can adapt. But as I've got older, I realize this adaption is actually me crossing my own boundaries to meet other people's needs.
Exactly.
And now I've come in this place where I'm slowly stopping being this yes, Shauna, and being more of a people pleaser is less in my intention. And it's okay when I say no. It's okay if this was what someone wanted, but in the end of the day, this is not going to happen. But what I'm learning to do is, instead of avoiding this topic, I'm actually expressing why it's not an option for me. So I'm getting the inner strength to be stronger, to be like, actually, no, this is not comfortable, or this is too much work for me to do right now. I don't have the capacity right now. These are my boundaries. And I'm going to respect that this is too much, because I don't know about you, Kaz, but sometimes I used to have this kind of inner voice saying, oh, why can't you do more? Why can't you take that on? Why can't you also adapt to this person's needs? Like, and it's like, not the fact that I'm taking on too much, but it came across with, oh, I'm not doing enough.
Mm.
And to be doing enough is to take on everything. And I've only, like, it's crazy how it's taken me so long to realize people don't do everything. Like,
that's true.
I don't know where I learned this from, but people don't do everything. People take pauses. People figure out what really works for them, what is right for them. And also, as we're growing in our interest, in our values, in our education, we also say no or stop doing other things we were doing before. And that's also okay, you know? Just because we started something doesn't mean we always have to keep doing it. And this is also learning in the boundaries of, okay, I've done this and I've supported this course for a long time, but actually I think it's time for me to take a step back. And these are things I've had to really experiment and learn through my own, because only I know my boundaries. And I think that's was kind of the hardest thing to acknowledge. I'm in charge of this.
You are. You definitely are in charge. And you need to be in charge. Like, you know, no one's going to take good charge as you would for over your life, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you've said, like, one thing that really struck me in all of this is how you interpreted adaptability. Because I don't know, like, whether, I guess it's in the Asian context, like, because I grew up in Singapore, and you know, we Singaporeans struggle with tradition and progression and modernity. So, you know, like, we want to be modern, we are a modern city, but we are still very much firmly entrenched in tradition. And all my life, like, adaptability is something that is a value. It is treasured, it is cherished, and an adaptable person is a person who is efficient, who is productive, who is conforming, and who is empathetic. And that's the narrative, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I feel like adaptability, like you said, often stands in direct contrast to boundaries. Because, you know, when you adapt, when you bend, when you, you know, like, decide, like, okay, I will go with this, or like, okay, I can manage without this, or, you know, things like that, you end up kind of like erasing your boundaries. You end up kind of like moving your boundaries. So, like, yeah, you're right. You know, at 40, I would say that I've only really kind of like, embraced this uncomfortable truth all my life, because like up to my early 30s, I've been very proud of the fact that I'm very adaptable. But only recently did I realize that actually that's not a good thing. Like, because, you know, that just means that your boundaries are questionable. Yeah, because some of the things that we might adapt to may not may not help us. It may not be healthy for us. So, yeah, I think that really rung a bell with me. Like, I feel like, okay, and you're right. Like, I feel like as I get older, it becomes harder to, like, you know, be adaptable and to kind of, like, move my boundaries, because somehow or other, with age comes the wisdom that, you know, this is who I am and this is my identity and this is what I'm comfortable with. And there are some things that I cannot compromise. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that, you know, yeah, you know, like what you said, like you've got to like, in a way, manage expectations sometimes and learn how to say, learn when to say yes, when to say no, and when to say maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's where the boundaries are drawn, you know what I mean? Yeah. Wow, intense. Okay, so family context. Let's dig in the family closet, okay? Let's dig. All right, let's dig into the family closet, okay? All right, which family rule did you keep and which one did you decide to rewrite? Like, you know, since we talked about, like, boundaries and how it changed over the years.
Mm. Family rule that I decided to keep? I'm honestly unsure. What? But what I decided to rewrite, honestly, this is a topic me and my cousin have actually also spoken about a few times, right? Religion and spirituality. It's for me, like, we both grew up Hindus with,
yeah,
you know, you have a shrine in your home traditionally,
mm-hmm,
you have your morning, yeah, prayers, you celebrate certain festivities for the gods, you're going to the temple.
Yeah.
And I also, in my crazy journey, in my childhood, we also lived in Singapore for 5 to 6 years. So we also had this, as a kid growing up in the Singapore context to an extent, in these just under 6 years. And like, my parents, obviously coming from Singapore, brought this back again to the UK. And for me, the, like, way religion has been taught, with the prayers, with certain rituals, with the deities, focusing on the deities, mm-hmm, something I struggle with my whole life, even as a kid, it was hard for me to connect to it. And I do feel when I challenge this topic on deities, mm-hmm, and how God is represented and how religion is sometimes utilized in the culture, where maybe we can focus more on our inner self and what we do day to day and how our actions have a reaction, is kind of not understood that this is also part of, like, the Hindu philosophy, you know, when we do go back so far back, that has an essence. But the focus on kind of visiting temples and kind of this narrative is something I have not kept to this family tradition, family rule, and it is something which is very big in our family. Despite, yeah, the more progressive side of things, I think this tradition and, yeah, religious context is very big. They love going, yes, to temples. Our dads go to temples, yeah, as a holiday. Yeah, they're very invested into temples.
They're very invested into temples.
And this is something I definitely feel I'm an exception in the family context.
Okay.
Mm. How about you? What, yeah, did you keep?
Okay, what did I keep? Nothing really strikes me at this point. I mean, I don't, like, consciously flout any rules, but I know for a fact what I rewrote. That, mm-hmm, one I know. So the rule that I rewrote was, okay, so this is this is quite backward, actually. So when I was younger, in my maternal side of the family, they used to have this system when there's a family gathering. Like, so the men eat first, then the children, then the women. Yeah. And the oldest man in the family sits at the head of the table. which is usually my dad, and then my uncles, and they would all eat first, and then the children will eat. Sometimes the children eat with the men, and after everybody eats, then the women eat. But mind you, the women were the ones who cooked the feast. So, you know, I was, as a child, even when I was 7, 8, I would be very, like, confused. Like, anger hadn't set in at that point, but there was confusion. Like, why is it that the women cooked? Because I would watch my grandmothers, my aunts, my mom cook the whole day. And then I'm like, why are they eating last? Why are they not eating first? And my grandmother used to say, like, oh, because, you know, when we cook, we don't feel hungry, so we don't eat. And she would say things like that. So I never really understood it, but I was always very confused. And I was always feeling very strange, because the best chicken pieces would be taken by the men and the children. And the women would be left with, like, you know, the gizzards, the neck pieces, say the rib cage, which is not very substantial. So, like, I always thought that was a bit strange, very odd. As I grew older, the anger set in, and I was like, oh, that's not fair. Like, you know, that is not fair. Like, why is this the case? Why is there this hierarchy when we're eating? So what happened is, as I grew older and as I got more confident about myself and my boundaries, I decided I'm not following the rules. Like, you know, whoever who wants to follow the rules could follow the rules, but I will not follow the rules. So I would sit with the men. And then they'd be like, oh, you want to eat now? I was like, yeah, I'm hungry. I want to eat. And I would eat. Yeah. And, you know, like, now I've, like, once I started working, once I've, you know, got into a certain period in life, and then my mom had passed and all of this. Now my dad, he doesn't do that anymore. So whenever there's a family dinner, everybody goes to the table and everybody takes turns to sit at the head of the table. And there's no, like, oh, this is your seat, this is my seat. And basically, like, that rule has been totally unwritten now, I feel. Like, family gatherings no longer have this hierarchy. So I feel like somewhere I started something, and, you know, I kind of, like, shook up that hierarchy. So, yeah, that I like. So that would be a rule that I rewrote, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm quite happy that I rewrote that rule, because I don't think there should be anyone who eats first or does that, you see.
And yeah, that's so interesting, you know, because, and this is where it shows this, like, almost different family context we both had, despite our dads being brothers. Well, my dad and mom both are really good cooks. And my dad would cook on a Sunday because mom is looking after us most of the week. So dad's kind of, like, focus on cooking is on Sundays. And we all would sit together and he would serve all of us. Like, it's his, like,
nice.
But it comes from, like, the bottom of his heart that he wants to serve and see you eat his food. And he's so, you've had my dad's cooking. You know what it's like.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Yeah. And it's, like, it's so interesting because I don't think I've ever experienced that in that context, really, where we, where the men were all sitting first, like, probably when we would just, like, pop by to aunts' houses, but because you're only there for, like, 20 minutes. And also it's, you're not going there for necessarily lunch, but you're going there, like, on Diwali when you're going and visiting everyone and you're eating in, like, 5 different people's houses, and you just have to go and sit down and eat because you're the guest and you're all sitting together and eating. But they're not necessarily eating because they've already eaten with probably the guest that was there before. And I'm used to it in that context, but never really when the food's been cooked for everyone in the house at that moment.
Yes.
And then you're taking turns to go at the table. And it's so interesting you speak of that, because, and this is, you're talking about it on our side.
Yeah.
Of the family.
No, on my mom's side.
On your mom's side of the family.
On my mom's side. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Our side of the family, when they invited over for the feast at my mom's side of the family, because extended families all have big family gatherings, we follow the rules as well. So the men eat first. Our uncles eat first. Yeah. So there was this hierarchy. Interestingly, I mean, in 2 days ago, when I was having a lesson with my students, we were talking about feminism and we were talking about this. And my other students who also come from a Southeast Asian context and they're not Indians, she said that it still happens in her family today.
Wow.
Like, she goes to her aunt's place and, you know, she's the guest, but because she's a girl, they've asked her to help serve the food to the men.
Crazy.
And yeah, I mean, these are like 17, 18-year-old girls. And, you know, it's still happening in today's context. So we were, interestingly enough, I mean, it wasn't planned that, you know, the radio show and the topic in class would be the same. But somehow or other, we went down that road and I was like, wow, okay. Like, for me, it happened like maybe 20 years ago. But for her, it's happening like now. So, you know, yeah, these are like boundaries that, you know, I feel like needs to be established.
Yeah.
And, you know, rules that needs to be rewritten because, yeah, it's basic. It's a basic dignity. It's basic respect for everyone in that sense. Yeah. So, yes.
But, boundaries. You know, amazing that you changed that. You rewrote it in your family setting.
Yeah, I was the eldest in the family and also the first one in the university. So, you know, I had all of this like feminist readings that I had done and all this like thinking time, you know, while writing my literature essays. And I'm like, okay, no.
I'm hungry.
Yeah. I'm using all this brain power, you know, and in my food. Like,
exactly.
It's got to happen. It's got to happen. Yeah. And I'm so glad that it has happened. And I'm really proud of my dad for like, you know, even though he's been in this system for like, when this system changed, he was probably like 50 or something. He changed and adapted. So in that sense, I like that adaptation.
Yes.
That adaptability is good. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, like, I think he also learned the boundaries. He learned my boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he respects my boundaries. So, like, I'm grateful for that. So, do you think Tamil families are good at respecting boundaries? What do you think? Like, from your context?
This is tough. Majority, from my experience and what I see, no. I feel like when you try, I don't know. I don't want to stereotype here out there for anyone.
I'm just going to say that, you know, we are both going to get booted out of the family very soon.
Yeah, if they hear the show.
They're gonna disown the both of us, but we love them.
So much love.
You know, we love each other as well. So much love. We love our dads. We love our cousins. You see, it's a cousin show. Come on, it's our family.
But no, like, so honestly, I think when boundaries are spoken about or you try to put your boundary, the guilt trip is put on. Like, as if the boundary diminishes the love and the respect. And this when I'm a bit like, oh, no, like, I'm here.
Yeah.
And also trying to do it in a amicable, respectable way of where my boundaries are. But then this, like, very, some might call it, you know, you could say in this, like, manipulative, I don't think it's necessarily meant in such a malicious way, but, and it's not that it comes across malicious, but it's really this guilt trip of, then is the love reduced because you're not doing what I want you to do it? And this, so this is when I feel
PhD at guilt tripping.
100%. Like, and, you know, I've had this from my parents growing up and sometimes it happens even now. And I think maybe it's like a conditioning of not understanding that utilizing this love is guilt tripping. I don't know. Sometimes it's fully comprehended of what they're even saying or doing when they say it in this way. But that's where I feel like, no, the boundaries are not respected. Because if not, it should just be like, okay, that's fine. You do you. Boundary links with communication for me. It's like it goes hand in hand. Because firstly, we need to communicate our expectation. We need to communicate what is our, what can we do? What is our capacity? What is not feasible?
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. So, like, I think really important things that you've brought out here. One is that actually boundary and love is not synonymous.
Mm-mm.
Like, you know, it's not like, you know, if you love me, you will bring down the boundaries. No, it's not that. You can love the person fiercely and aggressively and still have your own boundaries. And I think that's what true love is, no matter who it's directed at. And the other thing that you brought out, which I really think makes a lot of sense, is communication. Like, because it's no point in you having these boundaries and then, you know, these boundaries are not articulated. So no one knows that these are your boundaries. And then when they overstep these boundaries, you feel hurt or you feel angry or you feel rage. And that's also in some ways not fair. Yeah. So, yeah, these are like really good points. I'm taking notes.
Thanks Life for you're doing a good job at like summarizing me today. I really appreciate it.
It's like a occupational hazard. Do that all the time. We facilitate. The teachers facilitate. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I really like that. I think that's true, and that's something that, you know, we need to remind ourselves, and we need to be kinder, you know, when we hear about these boundaries and when we, like, you know, we shouldn't equate that with love. So, yeah. Wow. Okay.
I did want to add another point onto this boundaries
yes.
and love.
Go for it.
No, but I think you have a really good point there, because I think when someone shares their boundaries, I don't know, I've been in the position where friends of mine have put their boundaries down and it has felt a bit like a sting and you're like, oh, okay. But that sting is that actually like an internal wound within myself that has nothing to do with this friend and what they've actually just said. It's an internal wound of maybe not even being able to put my own boundaries in.
Okay.
And this person has been like, hey, you know, I don't have the capacity right now, da da da. Or in the work context, you know, and you're like, oh, but I'm doing it. This is like, why is this allowed for them and I can't do it? But actually, we can do it.
Yes, you can.
But we are not maybe trained or learned how to do this. And I think this is something like, I don't know, I feel like to the listeners, it would be cool if you hear yourself or to think if, how is your own boundaries? Like,
yeah, like what are your boundaries? Yeah.
And what if it's hard? It is hard sometimes to think of like on the spot, what are my boundaries? But then also being in a setting, whether it's work or with your friends or a relationship, where you're just like, this is too much. How do you share this? Like, I think it's just really nice activity to try out.
If you want to. Because you should. I'm going to try it out. It's not about like being selfish. That's not it. That's not what we say. We're not saying that, you know, you've got to be self-preserving and selfish and like never ever like, you know, concede to anything or do anything for others. But it's more of like, you know, depending on your context, depending on your circumstance, depending on the time of the day, depending on how you're feeling at that point in time, sometimes it's okay to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship is strong, genuine bonds, and your friendship is one that is built on the kind of trust that you have, they would be able to understand like the fact that you would need that boundary at that point in time.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So sometimes you don't want that biryani. Sometimes you want another biryani. It's fine. They're all biryanis.
They're all rice.
Yeah, all rice. Sometimes we can even have biryani with millet, so that's okay. It's about boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, also respecting other people's boundaries when they can't meet your expectation. I think that's also very important. And also to understand if it does impact you, which is okay, that you feel maybe a bit uncomfortable or there is more unpleasant feeling in, but you can't really understand why. Just explore this further as well. Because why does this bother me or make me feel uncomfortable when someone is putting their boundaries there? Yeah. What does it say about me? I don't know. It's something I've explored and looked into quite a bit. Like, I live with, there's 5 of us in my flat. So boundaries is a topic.
Definitely.
Having your space, having this, when we're sharing the kitchen and it's just too much, you know, to be like, I need some quiet time. And like learning this in such a shared space, it's been very interesting. And also sharing our expectations, and yeah, I don't know, it's been a good learning curve to have this regularly to look into.
Yeah, I'm sure like living in a flat with five others would definitely teach you a lot of things about boundaries as well, and when to have it and when you relax it. Yeah, I live alone, so yeah, my home is my safe space. No boundaries there. What I want to do.
But you can't walk naked in your flat, so.
No, sorry. That's illegal in Singapore. The neighbors, if they see that through the windows, they could call the police and you can get into trouble.
Because, you know, even in your own flat, there are
that's
rules.
Boundaries. There's legal boundaries. Legal boundaries, guys. That cannot be crossed.
So I feel like we could keep talking about boundaries, but I think maybe
we can go on, but we need boundaries for that one. We gotta like,
I think maybe people want to hear a song, because we also found an artist for today's episode. She is a Danish born, grew up in the UK, Tamilian female artist. She's based in London now. Her name is Prit. She sings a lot on blending Eastern and Western cultures together, the role of women she takes on, and critiques the double standards that come in our culture. And she's fabulous.
Yeah. I know, I like her. And I like the song that we are like introducing to our listeners today. It's called Identity.
And enjoy.
You're only getting older, age is just a number, scary what they tell ya. Just cause you're a woman, you focus on my come up, then you wait for me to fuck up. Blame it on my mama, cause she gave me too much freedom. Your son is out here wilding, your brother's acting childish, your cousin says he's grinding, but we all know that he's lying. Why don't you mind your business, who cares who I'm lipsing? My impulsiveness is sexy, I know you're trying to vex me, yeah. I can be modest and cute, but not when it suits you. You lot can do one too, my life is my choice too. Gave you the right to judge when you've been holding to the same grudge. You won't budge, you won't trust no one with the truth. The same rules don't apply to you. Shame, my eyes on the game, they're calling my name, I am what I claim, oh. I don't look pretty yet with him, I don't need to bleach my skin, soaking in the melanin, I'm desirable within myself, see I'm laughing way too loud and I need to find a husband. No one wants a girl who's had multiple ex-boyfriends. See, girls, we don't have feelings, on dreams or aspirations. We try our best to open up on multiple occasions. What if I really love him and I really wanna cuff him? Would you be supportive or worry about his race? And why don't you mind your business? My life, my own decisions. My impulsiveness is sexy, I know you're trying to vex me, yeah. I can be modest and cute, but not when it suits you. You lot can do one too, my life is my choice too. Gave you the right to judge when you've been holding to the same grudge. You won't budge, you won't trust no one with the truth. The same rules don't apply to you. Nothing else to lose. Don't believe in no shame. calling my name, I am what I claim. Oh, don't believe in no shame. My eyes on the game, they calling my name, I am what I claim. Oh, I don't believe in no shame. My eyes on the game, they calling my name, I am what I claim. Don't believe in no shame. My eyes on the game, they calling my name, I am what I claim.
The person you are calling is unable to take your call. Please leave your message after the tone. To re-record your message, key hash at any time.
Hello?
Atika?
Where are you?
How many phone
Welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed Prit and Identity, because that song also did talk about boundaries. So we are on to our next segment, and the next segment is Tevia. Tevia is a Tamil word. It means, is this necessary? And me and my cousins, we use Tevia whenever we are stuck in a situation where we are like, is this really necessary? Why are we even in this situation? And that's what Tevia is. So this would be the format of the show. We will, our last segment of the show will be a Tevia sharing moment. And today, I think my cuz, Shona, has got her own Tevia moment. So yes, cuz.
Thank you. Yeah, Tevia. So I had some friends visiting from the UK, and it was really nice. We hadn't seen each other for almost a year, and we were in the countryside at my partner's family home. And, you know, like, I'm not a person who goes on my phone often in general. And I even have this, like, how long I'm online for. So it's like 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So people know after 9 p.m. don't get a response from me. But, you know, I put these boundaries in. And there were five of us and one of our friends is often on her phone. When we've met, and we haven't actually spent like a whole week together all the time, but in the past it's more just for like dinner or, yeah, an afternoon. And she's on her phone regularly. So I had to have my big mouth and share. Oh, maybe we could do like a no phones day to the group. And I kind of meant it like to everyone in the group, but maybe there was a slight hint towards one person more. And my other friend jumped on this and was like, yes, V, you need to not be on your phone for a whole day because you're always on your phone. So from my kind of generalized comment, let's try this out together, turned to be by my other friend. And I know what she meant from it because we'd both experienced it. But it went kind of directly to our friend of, yeah, you're the person who is on your phone and should not be on your phone for at least a day. There we are. Like, why did I have to start this? And obviously, my other friend B, she's passionate when she speaks. And she definitely expressed it very strongly and, like, gave examples even of when our other friend is on her phone and our friend just went quiet. Like, you know, when someone's upset and they've gone quiet.
Oh, no.
Oops. What, exactly. And then I was like, oh, Shiza, like, I started this, it's my fault, and I'm aware. And I was like, oh no, you know, let's just see, it's okay. And then we kind of all had breakfast and was kind of pushed aside, and then, you know, I could feel she was like, our friend who we'd asked about not being on her phone was very quiet, and I was like, are you okay? And she was like, no, it actually hurt me. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, actually we shouldn't have said that. And like, even though I kind of started it, my other friend B definitely had the felt the guilt more. And this was really there we are. It was like, and I really was like, there we are, Shauna. Why did I even have to start this comment?
There we are, Shauna.
And like, and then it just grew, you know, it escalated without really needing to, because I think there's just feelings that maybe weren't ever expressed in a more amicable way, kind of built up from the past reunions and meetings that kind of just came out in this moment. So, but it was all fine, like we spoke it out, and that was really but this was really like a there they are, why did I have to start this? Was it necessary? Because like, what was this going to do? And the end of the day, it didn't even, you know, we apologize, and maybe some people have to be on their phones for a reason. Because I think,
yeah, maybe
this phone addiction, being on social media, like it is an addiction. It has a dopamine high. It is a way of maybe kind of taking this time out. Everyone does has their phone contact for different reasons and for different durations. And like me and this other friend, we've actually quit social media. Like I stopped it over a year and a half ago now. And I was telling my friend B about it, and then she has stopped it for like almost coming to a year now. And we both feel really like light from this. So I think it's also then we're creating this expectation of our life right now onto our other friend who's not even there, you know? Like, she's just finished a PhD. Yeah. She's working full time. She's also like a helping carer at home. Like, so maybe this online social media time is kind of her pause from everything going on. And, you know, we kind of had to like realize this in this conversation.
Yeah.
Whilst we apologize and realize, okay, this was not necessary to talk about. This was not like, this was us projecting something else onto the situation. So yeah, this was a barrier moment in our holiday.
This is a good barrier moment. This one is like really barrier.
But
maybe different people just take different timings to get to a certain position, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So maybe your friend would get to the position of like the point where, you know, she might decide not to use the phone as much, or maybe she would never get to that, and that's fine as
well.
And
that's okay, exactly. And yeah. But I just also want to show there we are comes not only for you being the kind of person experiencing it, but also we can be the people creating it, you know? So I wanted to show like a shift in...
Yeah.
Is it necessary? Because it's funny, but also you realize our words have meaning.
We do, definitely. And I think like the more people realize this, the better the world's going to be.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
God will.
So that's my therapy moment. And on that note, I would like to say a big thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you, Cuz, for taking the time.
Yes.
Thank you to Common Voices for giving us the space. Hope you enjoyed our second episode of Sisters Nadigam.
Our stories, chaos, culture, and everything in between.
From Germany.
And Singapore. We'll see you next time. Say bye.
Bye.